This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown. May the 4th be with you. It's May the 4th, an annual and informal commemorative day for fans across the globe and to honor the Force and talk about Star Wars franchise and all of its glory. Here to discuss the cultural significance of the films and all things Star Wars is Dr. David Christopher from the Department of Art History and Visual Studies at the University of Victoria. He also teaches a course called Star Wars, a Cultural History, and joins us via Skype in Victoria, British Columbia. Dr. Christopher, thank you so much for making time to be with us on the show today. We're so appreciative.
Good morning, Dave.
So today, social media will be bursting with quotes, memes, and posts celebrating the films. But let's try and unpack why it's such a big deal. There's no doubt the franchise is groundbreaking, but what historical impact has it had on the film industry?
And that's a huge question, and there's no small answer to it. In fact, there's no single answer to it. You really need to identify which element of culture or history that you're referring to. You know, from a cinematic perspective, George Lucas's original 1977 film was, of course, incredibly groundbreaking. Along with a few years earlier, you had 2001: A Space Odyssey, and along with it, you had Spielberg's Jaws, and these sort of redefined what the blockbuster film was. And they redefine the way people talk about films and the way that people expected certain degrees of special effects and certain degrees of visual perfection in terms of what they were seeing online. He developed Industrial Light and Magic, and he did extensive practical special effects. But, you know, that's just from a cinematic perspective where he basically reformulated the model for creating large budget blockbusters. On a more cultural or social level, you know, the effect of Star Wars was to sort of establish a new definition of what fandom meant. And then it had an international appeal that had never been seen before, I don't think. Hollywood films had been international since their inception, but not with the type of reception that this film had. And so the ideological impacts that are embedded in some of the representations were also huge in sort of redefining what was considered from a very Western-centric perspective, normal or normative. So lots of things that the film did in its huge, huge unexpected success in 1977.
Let's unpack a couple of those elements, starting with George Lucas and his vision for the film. What was he trying to create as he was putting this film together and bringing it to the big screen?
Dave, I'm going to, you know, probably offend some Star Wars fans, identifying as one myself quite openly. I don't think George Lucas is necessarily the genius or the brilliant individual that history often credits him with being. I certainly think that his reformulation of old conventions was in itself quite brilliant, but perhaps just as lucky as brilliant. The narrative surrounding his intentions for the film, the larger story of Star Wars that unfolded over decades in front of the original film, has changed largely at his own hands as he tries to sort of create a mythology around himself, I think. And what we see in the original films is an incredible recombining of nothing new as it happens. I mean, old mythological tropes, the Oedipal narrative of the son seeking the father, very, very psychoanalytical approaches to it were popular, especially with the slicing of the hand, with the very phallic lightsaber. And then what we see when he moves away from recombining established conventions, like, for example, the swashbuckler, the Buck Rogers type images that he was recreating, into original narratives, which we see in the prequel trilogy. A lot of the creative energy that built his reputation became obvious to a lot of people that it wasn't there. But these stories were unbelievably powerful, if only for the innovative way that he put other conventions that had been well established together. And, you know, the delightful story of the young, innocent almost ingenue become space wizard obviously appealed to a lot of people in combination with the incredibly spectacular special effects that at that time nobody had seen anything like before.
Mm-hmm. What about the fandom? You mentioned the fandom side of this before. They can certainly be considered, let's call them hardcore. But was that level of hardcore fandom something that had been seen in a cultural following of a film before?
You know, as a scholar, I hate to ever give a definitive answer, but this is one of those situations where the answer is no. There had never been a fandom of this type or loyalty. And you know, not only did he establish sort of the tripartite narrative structure, which became really popular. We see Indiana Jones do it, where the first movie is sort of a standalone, and then the second movie is a cliffhanger, and then the third movie wraps it all up. This became the convention for movies, like I said, like the Indiana Jones trilogy was originally a trilogy. Then we see, you know, The Lord of the Rings does it. A whole series of films have done it. But these individuals became so invested in it. And part of the reason, I think, is because we have what's called early intermediality. One interviewer in one of the documentaries about Star Wars said George Lucas created a sandbox for kids and adults that they could play in. And of course, the toy market that was established with Kenner Toys is no small element in all of this. So he's producing, mass producing toys that of course, that was not new, but the appeal of these as they related to the film created sales that had never been seen in the toy market before, at least for a particular line of products. And these toys, in conjunction, again, with the narrative possibilities that surrounded the universe, the galaxy that he had created for everybody to play in, really developed a fandom that some people would identify as pathological. A theorist like Henry Jenkins would suggest it simply as a cultural phenomenon. And what's very interesting is what these individuals who identify as part of the fandom, participate with the fandom, are doing for themselves. But then this standard of fan base, again, we see it establishing what becomes the norm for these big blockbuster institutions like Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, and other such films, Doctor Who, other such franchises that have the same sort of fantasy impetus underpinning the ability for even the adult mind to play inside the fantasy.
A lot of those subcultures that you described, like Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, those have emerged on the cinema screen inside the last 20 years. I'm curious, what's happened in the last couple of decades, pretty much since the release of Episode One, that has maybe changed subculture like Star Wars from being, quote, for nerds to being a broader, wider range of pop culture?
That is a very difficult question.
I know. I apologize. I know it's early in Victoria as well. I apologize for that one.
I have a couple of ideas. And again, this is when I will shy away from offering a definitive answer. But particularly in the last 20 years, I think two things have happened that may be participating in developing what you describe. One of them is pop culture has moved out of sort of a high culture and commercial or low or working class culture binary. Which was typical of scholarship in terms of modernism, was to sort of define popular culture as a residual category, as John Story would say, an other to what is considered good culture, like Shakespeare or Dickens, for example. And that illusion was sort of exploded a little bit when we began to realize that all of these things are signifying practices that have significant impact on the real lives of people. Popular culture, perhaps more than what had become defined as high culture, simply because it's popular. And the other advent, which often sort of gets swept into the technology, under the technology carpet, I'll call it, is of course the advent of digitization in concert with the advent of the internet. And with what can happen with digital film, you know, and George Lucas's Episode One had the first fully digital character in terms of its screen representation with Jar Jar Binks. And there's some great scholarship on why Jar Jar Binks was so hated, outside of the fact that he's a garish racial stereotype and an otherwise quite irritating character. compared to characters that I think he was supposed to echo in the first one. In the first trilogy, you know, C-3PO was sort of a throwaway comic character, again, signifying a number of troubling social stereotypes. But Jar Jar Binks took it to a new level. Some of the animation was not congruent with the realism, so to speak, that people expected of the representations of Star Wars that had been established with practical effects. But with digitization, a whole realm of fantasy possibilities comes available. And part of the development of digital or CGI cinema has to be credited to George Lucas's efforts through ILM with the establishment of so many of the special effects in, you're right, particularly episode one.
Dr. Christopher, this last answer, I'm sorry, we're a little tight for time, so I've got to hold you to about 90 seconds on it, and I apologize, because it's kind of a big, broad question, but you mentioned some of the problematic inclusion elements that were created along the way here, but in recent years, with some of the recent episodes of the Skywalker saga, we've seen a bigger focus on inclusion, of diversity. How much does a film be, a popular culture franchise like Star Wars, being at the forefront of inclusion, possibly ripple into the rest of society?
Incredibly. And to try and keep my answer concise, the very term popular and the very impact. I mean, you don't have to have seen Star Wars to know Darth Vader, but even more impactful is the nature of melodrama and how much of an effect that has on a viewer's mind. You don't have to have seen Star Wars to know also Darth Vader's theme song. And even though the new, I would hesitate to credit Disney with significant progressive social identity politics. You have an African-American character who's unfortunately largely relegated to background comedy, and they continue to represent physical disability in particular as a one-way path towards evil. And so I think we need to cast a critical eye on the celebration of inclusion that has been credited to Disney.
Dr. Christopher, it's been so nice to chat with you today. One last quickie. Do you have a favorite piece of the Star Wars narrative puzzle? Is there a favorite film or a favorite series that you'll always find yourself flipping onto when you're in a Star Wars mood?
Yes, it's Empire Strikes Back. And if only to admit that I participate in some of the more normative elements of our culture, the Oedipal moment when Vader reveals that he is his father as he cuts off his own son's hand was so dramatically pure. It was such incredible melodrama. And of course, the special effects had improved quite a bit as well. Just watching the Millennium Falcon actually move quickly compared to the first movie. I think any diehard Star Wars fan would say Empire.
Dr. Christopher, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today, and may the Fourth be with you.
Thank you very much.
That's Dr. David Christopher. He is from the Department of Art History and Visual Studies at the University of Victoria. We were talking about the cultural significance of Star Wars. You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.